Welcome to Alton Universe Top 40. My name is John McMullen. For the next hour, we will listen to some records, talk about chart positions, and make some good-hearted adjustments that time and taste demand. On today's installment, we will appreciate a singer-songwriter whose second album, Just For You, peaked at number 80 on the Billboard album charts, an incredibly low peak considering that 7 of its 11 tracks became hit singles. For our little slice of heaven at number 7, we will hear a brilliant rendering of a Rodgers and Hart composition sung by a vocalist who only started singing pop and jazz to help pay her tuition at Juilliard, where she studied opera. Later, we will present a selection that was intended to be pitched to the Jay Giles Band by the relatively unknown singer-songwriter who demoed it. When that songwriter's producer heard the track, he demanded that the promising young rocker keep it for himself. Finally, for our Hall of Perfection track, we examine the amazing chart run of a single that reached the number one position on the Billboard charts on the last day of 1966 and hit number one on basically every pop singles chart published in any country in 1967. But first, just as we do each week, we begin with a single that at some point was perched at number 40. Some of these were on the way up, some were on the way down. Some hit number 40 for a 1 week peak and then had a mind to drop. What kind of number 40 do we have today? Well, we hit a mother lode with a selection by the progressive album rock act, consisting of Pink Floyd's producer and several members of the pop rock group Pilot. As we have mentioned before, the instrumentalists on these recordings are generally the same, while the lead singing duties are rotated among several friends of the producer. On this particular single, just as he did on Games People Play, You Don't Believe, and Damned If I Do, Lenny Zakadik of the Trailblazers, Funky Fever, and Gonzalez took the lead vocal. Spending a week at number 40 in Billboard on its way to a peak of number 36 in Billboard and number 22 in Canada. That was Wouldn't Want to Be Like You by the Alan Parsons Project, which on this occasion consisted of the lead vocal of Lenny Zakadik singing over instruments played by that group from Scotland produced by Alan Parsons, Pilot.
Alt Universe Top 40.
Number
20.
At number 20, we have a laid-back song of lament by the 80s group that was credited by writer Mark Wasserman with being America's first true ska band, The Untouchables. According to lead singer Kevin Long, The Untouchables got together as mods who played ska. In 1982, they became the house band at the Roxy, the famous LA club. They appeared as a scooter gang in the movie Repo Man and spent lots of time on the road opening shows for the B-52s, Bow Wow Wow, Fishbone, and a relatively obscure group called No Doubt. Signed initially by Stiff Records and then MCA, The Untouchables recorded the album Wild Child, which featured the track What's Gone Wrong. The world-famous radio station we discussed a few months ago, KROQ, gave What's Gone Wrong enough spins to make it the number 18 song of the year on the 1984 K-Rock Top 106.7 Songs of the Year countdown. With a barely known single on the MCA label that actually became the number 18 song of the year on the K-Rock charts and should have, at the very least, reached number 20 in Billboard, Cashbox, Radio and Records, and in Canada, those were The Untouchables and What's Gone Wrong.
This one went to 11.
My name is John McMullen, and this is Alt Universe Top 40. During the 1974 Grammy Awards, Canadian country pop vocalist Anne Murray received a very brief and impromptu visit to her dressing room from none other than John Lennon. 1974 was the year that Anne Murray won the Best Country Vocal Performance Grammy for the single Love Song, her top five country hit that crossed over to reach number 10 on the Cashbox survey and number 1 on the Adult Contemporary chart. But John Lennon didn't track Anne down to discuss her crossover hit or even her Grammy. He popped in to let Anne Murray know that, in his opinion, her version of the Lennon-McCartney classic You Won't See Me was one of the best covers of a Beatles song ever recorded up to that point. And then he was gone, said Anne in a later interview.
When I call you up, your line's engaged. I have had enough, so act your age. We have lost the time that was so
spending a week at number 11 in Record World on its way to a peak of number 9 there, number 8 in Billboard and Cashbox, and number 1 on the Adult Contemporary chart, that was Anne Murray and her perfect for AM radio release on Capitol Records, You Won't See Me. Incidentally, in the process of double-checking the chart peaks on this single, I ran across an unbelievable photograph of Anne Murray, John Lennon, Harry Nilsson, Alice Cooper, and Mickey Dolenz all huddled up together. What a night it must have been for that unlikely party of five.
Number 10.
At number 10, we have a new wave classic from 1984 that peaked on the Billboard Hot 100 at number 31, but went all the way to number 1 on the U.S. Dance Club chart. It had oddball chart numbers all over the world as well. In the group's home country of England, the song stalled outside the top 40 at number 46. In France, it made it into the top 25. It did even better in Italy, reaching number 7. Out of the blue, the song was re-released as a single in 1990, and during its second run, it hit number 6 in Poland. In England, it charted 33 notches better than it did the first time around, hitting number 13. Regardless of its curious chart action, I will have to say that the group that recorded it, Talk Talk, put on one of the best concerts I have ever seen. I was fortunate to catch them during the summer of 1986 in Cambridge, England, and they knocked this tune right out of the airplane hangar. a single that should have, at the very least, reached number 10 in Billboard, Cashbox, and Radio and Records. That was Talk Talk and the original version of It's My Life, a single that no doubt covered in 2003, when they were far more famous than they were when they shared gigs with the Untouchables. No Doubt did better than the Talk Talk original on every country's singles chart except Italy, where they reached the same peak of number 7, and the U.S. Dance Club chart, where No Doubt peaked at number 16.
Number 9.
At number 9, we have a singer-songwriter whose second album, Just For You, peaked at number 80 on the Billboard album charts. By itself, that figure doesn't really mean very much. But when you factor in the amazing statistic that 7 of its 11 tracks became hit singles, a peak at number 80 seems remarkably low.
Girl, you'll be your woman soon. Love you so much, can't count all the ways I'd die for you, girl, and all they can say is, he's not your kind. They never get tired of putting me down, and I never know when I come around what I'm gonna find. Don't let them make up your mind. Don't you know, girl, you'll be your woman. Come take my hand. Girl, you'll be a woman soon, soon. You'll need a man.
I've been misunderstood for all of my life, but when the same girl just cuts like a knife, the boy's no good. Well, I finally found what I've been looking for, but if they get the chance, they'll end it for sure. Sure they won. Baby, I've done all I could. It's up to you, girl. You'll be a woman soon. Please, come take my hand. Take my hand, girl. You'll be a woman soon, soon. You'll need a man soon.
Peaking at number 9 in Cashbox and number 10 in Billboard and Record World, that was Neil Diamond and Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon, one of 7 well-known tracks off of his second album, Just For You. What were the others? Well, Shiloh, Solitary Man, Cherry Cherry, Red Red Wine, Thank the Lord for the Nighttime, and another selection that we will talk about in a few minutes.
Alt-Universe Top 40!
Number 8.
Now we're up to a selection that is modern and great and should have reached number 8. It is a track from an album that reached number 1 on the U.S. Alternative Chart and in the Netherlands. It reached number 4 on the Billboard Album Chart and number 2 on the Mainstream Rock Chart. The album did not do quite as well in England, barely denting the top 50 at number 49. In France, it did even worse when it stalled at number 133. The album we are talking about was the self-titled release by Wilco, the six-man alternative rock act based in Chicago. Part of the album was recorded in the group's own loft in Irving Park, Illinois, with the remainder being recorded at Neil Finn's Roundhead Studios in Auckland, New Zealand.
I'll go for you, I'll fight for you, I'll kill for you, I will. I'll go for you, I'll fight for you, I'll die for you, I will. I'll die alone on some forgotten hill, abandoned by the mill. All my blood will spring and spill. I'll thrash the air and then be still. You wake with a start from a dream and know that I'm gone. Steady in your hand. We will sing to yourself the rising, falling melody that you could never read without the choir's lead. Still alone and lost indeed, and your soul will not be free. I will go into all waters I'll wait. Now we'll know without remorse or regret the fairness of our trade. For you to live, I took your place. A deal was made and I was paid. And gold, as I was told, was a place where my body could be laid. Steal your life and die old in better homes, surrounded by your peers, without suffering or fear. Grandchildren far and near, and none will shed a tear for the love no longer here. I'll fight for you, I will. I'll kill for you, I will. I'll die for you, I will. And if I'll die alone like Jesus on the cross. Be tossed, my life will not be lost.
With an album track that is modern and great and should have reached number 8 and would have in the U.S. had it actually been released as a single, that was Wilco and I'll Fight from their self-titled album released on the Nonesuch label in 2009.
Alt Universe Top 40.
Now we are up to our little slice of heaven at number 7. It is a moody big band jazz number, brilliantly sung by an opera singer who attended Juilliard and who only began singing jazz in nightclubs to cover her tuition costs. Florence Catherine Currier was born on May 3, 1924 in Newton, Massachusetts, to parents who were both musically talented. When Florence was 4 years old, her parents moved her and her four siblings from Massachusetts to Florida. Young Florence took piano and vocal lessons and became an accomplished performer, gaining experience in front of local audiences throughout her childhood. That experience, combined with her undeniable natural talent, ultimately resulted in her acceptance into the prestigious Juilliard School of Music as a student of opera. In order to help her pay her tuition at Juilliard, Florence sang in the nightclubs and restaurants of New York City. While she was still in college, orchestra leader Art Mooney heard her sing and immediately offered her a job in his orchestra, on the condition that she change her name to Jane Morgan. After joining forces with Mooney and making her mark as a resounding success in Paris, the newly named Jane scored a deal with Columbia Records, making recordings in London with Bernard Hilda. Under this arrangement, Columbia released five of her singles. However, none of them charted, and she moved to Decca for three singles. With practically no success there, she released one on Polydor and four on Parlophone. But her real success came when she landed at Cap Records, working with pianist Ernest Bragg and arranger-conductor Marty Gold. Her amazing version of Rodgers and Hart's I Didn't Know What Time It Was became the side two closer of her debut album, which was called The American Girl from Paris. On the Cap label, she achieved 10 top 40 pop hits on the pop and adult contemporary charts, hitting number one in England with a record that peaked at number 21 in the U.S., The Day the Rains Came, from 1958. By the following year, Jane began performing on Broadway in musicals and, over time, appeared in Can-Can, Kiss Me Kate, The King and I, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, Hello Dolly, and several others. After she married music business mogul Jerry Weintraub in 1965, her schedule changed drastically as she concentrated on raising her three daughters. By 1973, she officially retired from performing, but made exceptions to perform for Presidents Jimmy Carter and George W. Bush. She received her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 2011.
Once I was young, yesterday perhaps, danced with Jim and Paul and kissed some other chaps. Once I was young, but never was naive. I thought I had a trick or two up my imaginary sleeve. And now I know I was naive. How sublime it was too. I didn't know what day it was. You held my hand, warm like the month of May it was. And I'll say it was grand. To be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, feel your touch, hear your voice. Say I'm all your own. I didn't know what year it was. Life was no prize. I wanted love, and here it was, shining out of your eyes. I know what time it is.
with Our Little Slice of Heaven at number 7. That was Jane Morgan and her brilliant rendering of I Didn't Know What Time It Was. Since our last broadcast, we have received messages from all around the world. Giovanni from Sicily heard our 9670 kHz broadcast on his Yaesu FT817 receiver and dipole antenna. He reported 35333 and described the signal as weak but without interference. He attached 2 audio clips and promised that he would be back to hear us again. Well, Giovanni, we appreciate your report and your air checks. We hope everything is going well for you in your radio paradise of Sicily. Alex from Belarus heard our 6070 kHz broadcast on his Texun S2000 with a 41-meter long wire. He reported 24332 and stated that his location was 140 kilometers south of Minsk. He sent us his best greetings and hopes our future transmissions are successful. Well, Alex, we appreciate your detailed report and we send our best greetings right back to you. Kunihiro from Japan heard our 6070 kHz broadcast on a web SDR from the Netherlands using an ALA 1530 loop antenna. He loved the music and thanked us for the fun and wonderful program. Well, Kunihiro, we thank you for finding us on the SDR, and we send our best regards to you from the United States. Can you hear us? If you can, please send your questions, comments, or reception reports to us in an email addressed to john@altuniversetop40.com. We would love to hear from you.
This is Alt Universe Top 40.
Number 6.
Now we're up to our bonus hit at number 6, awarded to an act that has placed at least 6 albums into the top 40 of the album charts. With their 15 chart albums on the British album charts, including 14 top 10s and 3 number 1s, plus an additional 5 compilations, 4 of which reached the top 5, today's act certainly qualifies. Back in 1981, an upstart record label called Mute Records in London released a song called Dreaming of Me, the debut single by the synthetic new wave act Depeche Mode. Written by group member Vince Clarke, it failed to chart in the United States and peaked at a disappointing number 57 in England. So, Vince tried again, writing the next Depeche Mode single, New Life. On the British charts, it did considerably better than its predecessor, making it all the way up to number 11. In the United States, though, it was not even released. On their third try, Depeche Mode recorded yet another Vince Clarke composition, a catchy synthesizer-based new wave dance song that has, over the years, become a true classic. It went straight to number 8 in England, number 11 in Belgium, number 4 in Australia, and became the group's American breakthrough, reaching number 26 on the Hot Dance Club Play chart.
Thank you. can't get enough.
Just like a rainbow, you know you set me free.
And I just can't get enough. And I just can't get enough.
You're like an angel and you give me your love.
And I just can't seem to get enough.
Bonus hit that should have, at the very least, reached number 6 in Billboard, Cashbox, Record World, and in England. That was Depeche Mode, and the last song that Vince Clarke wrote for the band prior to his departure, Just Can't Get Enough. My name is John McMullen, and this is Alt Universe Top 40. At number 5, we have a bluesy rock track by a Fargo, South Dakota native who began playing blues guitar when he was 12 and was signed to A&M Records by the time he turned 15. From the album Lie to Me, which peaked at number 44 on the Billboard album chart in the United States, here is Johnny Lang, backed by Bruce McCabe, Billy France, Dennis Morgan, Becca Bramlett, and, that's right, the ever-present Jack Holder.
Hold them down, be a chain. Things just can't stay the same. Oh, there's got to be a chain. Things that just can't stay the same. If I got any worse problem, I'll have myself to blame.
Thank you.
with There's Gotta Be a Change, an album track that should have been released as a single and should have made it up to number 5. That was Grammy winner Johnny Lang, produced by David Z.
Alt-Universe Top 40.
Number 4.
Now we're up to number 4, which usually means that we are going to play a selection that charted significantly better in England than it did in the United States. Today, however, we have just the opposite. A single that hit number 1 in the United States and number 4 in Canada, but did not even chart at all on the British charts, which, considering the roots of the song itself, is not surprising. Back in the early 70s, hard rock acts Humble Pie from England and Grand Funk Railroad from Michigan were touring together around the world, filling up arenas and literally partying like rock stars. According to rock writer Dave Marsh, the members of the two groups, who usually got along well with each other, found themselves in an argument one night over the greatness of the rock and roll that came from their respective countries. Humble Pie, of course, insisted that the greatest bands in the world were all from England. With his reply, Grand Funk's drummer Don Brewer stood up and announced to everyone the boastful sentiment that would soon be heard on radio stations everywhere, "We're an American band." With a single that hit number 1 across the board in the United States and did not even chart at all in England, that was Grand Funk and their rock anthem that was produced by Todd Rundgren and released on clear gold vinyl by Capitol Records, "We're an American Band."
Making changes that time and taste demand. This is Alt Universe Top 40.
Number 3.
Now we are up to our 3 from way downtown, and today we are talking about downtown Liverpool, home of the Nims Music Store, a business owned by the Epstein family, which was, by the early 60s, one of the biggest musical retail outlets in northern England. When Harry Epstein put his son Brian in charge of record sales in the original location of NIMS, he could not help but notice that Brian thrived in the business side of music. When NIMS expanded to include a second large location, Brian Epstein managed it all. As a matter of principle, Brian insisted that NIMS have available, in stock, at least one copy of every record commercially released in England. Keeping himself in touch with singles that had not yet charted turned out to be one of several fateful events that guided Brian into an even more lucrative career than running his family's music stores. On January 24, 1962, Brian Epstein became the manager of a group from his hometown that would change the world. After guiding the Beatles to worldwide success, Brian Epstein became somewhat of a celebrity himself. The management branch of NIMS managed numerous recording and performing acts. Everything that Brian touched seemed to turn to gold. But all was not well in Brian's world. It has been asserted by British rock musician Tom Robinson that John Lennon wrote our next song as a sympathetic nod to Brian Epstein, acknowledging the difficulty Brian experienced in his private life due to his orientation.
Here I stand, head in hand, turn my face to the wall. If she's gone, I can't go on, feeling 2 foot small. Everywhere people stare, each and every day. I can see them laugh at me, and I hear them say, hey, you've got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide your love away. How can I even try? She said to me, love will find a way. Gather round all you clowns, let me hear you say.
Our three from way downtown, those were the Beatles, getting a little help from symphonic woodwind player John Scott on both tenor and alto flute, playing the Lennon-McCartney composition produced and scored by George Martin, You've Got to Hide Your Love Away.
Alt-Universe Top 40.
Number 2.
Now we are up to number 2, which means that we are going to play a selection that should have reached number 1. Back in the mid-70s, a young songwriter in the band Mudcrutch came up with a song that he wanted to pitch to the Jay Giles Band. He even made a demo of it for that very purpose. While we don't know if the guys from Jay Giles ever heard it, we do know what producer Jimmy Iovine thought about the idea. He told the writer to record it himself, and that letting somebody else record it would be a crazy mistake.
I was talking with a friend of mine, said a woman that heard his cry, told him that she loved him so, and turned around and let him go. Then he said, you better watch your step, or you're gonna get hurt yourself. Someone's gonna tell you lies, cut you down to size. Don't do me like that, don't do me like that. Well, I love you, baby. Lies, cut you down to size. Don't do me like that. Don't do me like that.
Single that reached number 10 in Billboard, number 8 in Record World, and number 7 in Cashbox, but should have reached number 1 across the board. That was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and Don't Do Me Like That, a song that Tom, at one point, wanted the J. Geils Band to record. Now we're up to our Hall of Perfection track at number 1. It is a legendary recording that hit number 1 on the last day of December 1966 and turned out to be the biggest hit record of 1967, spending 7 weeks at number 1. It literally hit number 1 in every country that kept a singles chart at the time. With advance orders that exceeded a million, this amazing little single was guaranteed to be a gold record before it was even pressed. But it did far better than just a million. Even ignoring the sales of albums, 8-tracks, cassettes, and CDs that have contained this track, and not counting any digital copies sold or streamed in recent years, this 7-inch single is one of only 40 pressed singles in the history of the world to have sold over 10 million copies. That is staggering. So how did this record come about? Well, as it turned out, the song was one of the several tracks from Neil Diamond's 1966 album Just For You that ultimately became a hit. While Neil Diamond's version was the side two opener on the album, it stalled out at number 51 on the Billboard singles chart. But Neil's producer, Jeff Berry, loved the song and remembered it when his friend Don Kirshner called requesting that Berry produce a pop song for the Monkees that would be a little bit more upbeat than the latest batch of garage band-style recordings produced for the band by Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart. Jeff Berry jumped at the chance. He took charge of the sessions and used basically the same studio musicians that played on Neil Diamond's album. In fact, Neil himself played acoustic guitar on this cover version of his own song. Buddy Saltzman played drums, Russ Savakis played bass, and Al Gorgoni and Sal DeTroia played electric guitars. The memorable Vox Continental organ part was played by Stan Free. The tambourine, it was handled not by Davy Jones, but by George Devins.
I thought love was only true in fairy tales, and for someone else, but not for me. Our love was out to get me, that's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. I thought love was more or less a given thing. Seems the more I gave, the less I got. What's the use in trying when all you get is pain? When I needed sunshine, I got rain. Oh, then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I try. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace.
produced by Jeff Berry. That was Mickey Dolenz on a solid lead vocal, Mickey, Davey, and Peter on overdubbed backing vocals, and the biggest selling single of 1967, I'm a Believer, a song whose success caused Neil Diamond's career to explode. Well, that's all we have for today. Please be sure to join us next week for another installment of Alt Universe Top 40. In the meantime, to check out our older episodes, simply download the Mixcloud app and follow Alt Universe Top 40. Also, you can follow the links on our website at www.altuniversetop40.com. As we mentioned before, we would love to hear from you. Please send your questions, comments, or reception reports to us in an email addressed to John at altuniversetop40.com. For our website and email addresses, those are all lowercase and 40 is a number. Until we meet again, keep making those good-hearted changes that time and taste demand, and keep on smiling through the static.